Hello and welcome to the OMFIF podcast, a weekly discussion on key trends in investment and economic policy from some of the world's leading commentators. On this week's episode, we talk about the upcoming election in India. This is Ellie Groves from London, and today we talk to James Crabtree, Associate Professor of Practice, Lee Kuan Yew School of Public Policy, and author The Billionaire Raj, A Journey Through India's New Gilded Age. He lived in India for 5 years working for the FT, so he's an expert in all things Indian related. Welcome. James, I'd like to start with just asking you to give a brief overview of who is standing in the election.
Well, so India's election isn't like other elections that your listeners might be familiar with. For a start, it's vast. You have 1.3 billion people, so a voting electorate in the 500, 600, 700 million people eligible to vote. The country is also vast, and so you have dozens of political parties in a contest that will begin around the time this podcast goes live in April and will run for more than a month in different stages. But basically, most people see the contest as boiling down between two notionally national parties. Narendra Modi is the prime minister, and his party is a center-right Hindu nationalist party called the BJP. And then on the other side, you have the Congress party, who, although they are much diminished in these days, they and their leader, Rahul Gandhi, tend to be seen as the focus of opposition, although the opposition in India is really a kind of rag bag of lots of opposition parties who are banding together against Mr. Modi.
What are the key election platforms and promises from these two main candidates and parties?
So Narendra Modi was elected in a landslide victory in 2014, the most comprehensive victory in India for a generation. He won a majority in the lower house of parliament. And so in a sense, one way of thinking about this election is a referendum on how has his government done. And so I think there are three big issues that are at play in the election. The first of which is jobs. India has a burgeoning young population desperate for work. Mr. Modi promised to run as an economic technocrat to deliver growth and employment. There are some doubts as to how well he has done that. The second is the state of India's rural economy. India's voters, half of them are farmers. Half of the population is still farmers. It's still a very poor country. And so the state of rural India is always a big deciding factor in elections. And then the third is corruption and crony capitalism. Modi, again, ran as an anti-corruption candidate. He promised to clean up India after a series of corruption scandals, but as bad luck would have it, has found himself embroiled in a particularly nasty corruption scandal involving allegations of backhanders in the purchase of fighter jets by India's defense forces. So I think if you're looking for the divisions between the parties, then jobs, cronyism, and the state of rural India would be three to look out for.
Thank you. Looking at the economy for a moment, it's been attested to that billions of dollars of pre-election spending by the Indian government and political parties in the next 2 months is unlikely to stop the nation's economy from slowing down further. Do you think that's likely? What do you think the election means for the country?
Well, that's an interesting question. India's elections are so vast that there are some economists who suggest that indeed they are a form of Keynesian stimulus that you can see both in the money supply and to some degree in demand, the effect of elections, because putting it rather crudely, there's so much bribery that is passed through from the political parties who literally pay small cash bribes to voters to try and persuade them to vote that this can have a macroeconomic effect. I think more generally, however, investors tend to look at the election in terms of what it means for political reforms in India. And so the outcome that investors, I think, would want one way or another is one party to win reasonably well. Investors don't tend to like messy situations in which it's not really clear who's won and there has to be a weak coalition. At the moment, most analysts still think that Mr. Modi is probably odds on to return as prime minister, albeit with a substantially reduced majority. And so I think if you're an investor, you're going to look at this and think, if Mr. Modi comes back, is he going to have the mandate to introduce more structural economic reforms? And indeed, you know, were he to lose and somebody else was to be prime minister, then would they be more or less likely to introduce economic reforms?
Between the two parties, do their economic reform platforms look different, or is that difficult to say at the moment? Do their ideologies sit where investors might be more or less comfortable with one party above the other, or is it just stability that is the most important? So one of the contestants winning considerably and winning decisively is more important than who might take on the leadership position?
I think if you talk to investors, either in the sense of FDI investors or fund managers, then they will say that they want certainty. But actually, in India at least, the BJP, Mr. Modi's party, tends to be more centre-right and tends to have more support amongst financiers in Mumbai and Delhi. This Congress and other of the opposition parties tend to have a slightly more centre-left instincts. Nonetheless, India, as ever, is complicated. So the BJP, in its record in office, has been far from a kind of market-friendly technocratic reformer. They've introduced plenty of populist measures, and they have failed to introduce many structural reforms that experts might have advised. For instance, reforms to the banking system, which is overburdened with bad debts and dominated by pretty hopeless public sector banks. And so it's not a simple picture in which the BJP, which has more of a kind of centre-right heritage, is the most likely to introduce market-friendly reform, and the others aren't.
Going back briefly to what you alluded to in as much as the corruption throughout this electoral time, just wondering what impact that might have both on the voting system, on the level of democratic output, but also for the country as a whole.
Corruption is one of the central fault lines in Indian politics. It was why Narendra Modi was elected, as I said, or at least part of the reason why he was elected. Indian voters were fed up of corruption under the government that preceded Mr. Modi. And so he got a lot of credibility from his claim to be personally not corrupt, which I think very few people doubt, but also his promise that he would root corruption out of India's political system. He's had some success, but I think reasonable people would look at India and say that actually the progress has been patchy at best and modest in some areas. And so particularly the urban middle classes are quite worried about corruption still in India and want further action. And so I think corruption is likely to be one of the sticks with which the opposition parties, during the long campaign of the election, this six-week campaign in which the voting takes place in stages, that they will try and beat Mr. Modi with this stick that he claimed to be honest, but actually his government has been just as bad as all the others.
One thing you haven't brought up throughout what you think the key main issues are is technology, the rise of technology innovation in India. Do you think that will have an impact on the election, both in tackling the corruption potentially, so using technology to do that, or this innovation spirit of India? Do you think that will have an impact coming up in the election and then also beyond?
Technology will have a huge impact on the way that the campaign is conducted. So this will be the largest election in human history and probably also the most wired. So there are now 500 million internet users in India. The number has increased very dramatically in only the last couple of years. And so that means more and more citizens are going to be getting information about candidates through their smartphones, and the political parties are going to be trying to contact them in that way. So Indian elections are always a funny mixture of the 21st century, the 20th century, and the 19th century. So you still have a big emphasis on massed rallies in rural areas. Increasingly, you have slick television adverts of the sort that you'd associate with America. But more than ever, candidates and parties are trying to target people online using smartphones. And that comes with all of the problems that we've come to expect of that in the West. Big problems of fake news, a real scrutiny on the social media giants, particularly Facebook and WhatsApp, to see if they are able to stop potentially malicious information traveling across their networks that might affect the election. So I think a lot of scrutiny will be placed on the role that technology plays, and in particular, those two giant companies that are used so often in India and the role that they will play in the election.
Finally, it would be interesting to ask you about what you think the future for India is post this election and how the country will fit into the rest of the world in its foreign policy, but also its domestic economy. And that's a really interesting point you make about the social media scrutiny and how India might be used as sort of an example for the rest of the world as we look at how social media plays out in other democratic institutions.
Traditionally, foreign policy hasn't played a great deal of role in Indian elections. So the theory, and this is true in the US as well, what people are voting for tends to be immediate financial concerns. So jobs, the economy, growth. Also, we haven't mentioned caste yet. I mean, caste is really the primary way in which you would understand voting in India's economy. However, as India's role in the world increases, then it becomes ever more difficult to separate foreign policy and domestic policy. And that's particularly true. So your listeners will probably have followed the recent news of India and Pakistan having disputes across the border and a military flare up on both sides. And so it's possible that that may introduce more of a foreign policy component into this election. And that is likely to benefit the Prime Minister, Narendra Modi, if that does indeed occur.
Thank you. Finally, I'm going to ask you a prediction. Who do you think and what do you think is the most likely outcome of the election?
You're tempting me onto very dangerous ground here because obviously I really haven't got the faintest idea. I think the conundrum is that Narendra Modi is personally very popular. There isn't very good polling data in India, but such that there are suggests that Modi remains a pretty popular politician. People see him as a strong national leader. They like him personally. They admire various of his characteristics. But India's electorate is complicated and a lot depends on how unified the opposition parties turn out to be and how effective they are in their campaign. So I think most people probably believe that he's the most likely to come back, and I would concur with that. I still think that his record is impressive. He has the best electoral machine, he has the most money, and he is a very effective campaigner. Nonetheless, compared to a year ago, when I think most people would have thought that Modi would win handsomely, that the wind no longer seems to be at his back. The opposition have got their act together, and so at the very least, we think this is going to be close. And the idea that Modi may no longer be prime minister in a couple of months' time is something that people are at least beginning to contemplate.
Thank you so much. And thank you for joining us. We have covered a lot of ground. We've looked first at the country of India, the fact that this election is vast and it includes a lot of political parties. However, realistically, it boils down to two main parties with a collection of oppositions. The fact that there will be three main issues on this election platform. There'll be jobs, state of the rural economy, and tackling corruption. We've also looked at how the elections for Mackenzie's stimulus potentially, but also actually investors look at elections in terms of political reforms and therefore need or are looking for a decisive leader to come out of these elections. Then touched on technology and how this will have a huge impact on the way the election is played out this year, and especially looking at fake news and those large players, so Facebook and Google, and how the social media is set up to really combat and ensure that this fake news doesn't spread. Then we got out a potential prediction, so Modi having popular support and likelihood that he will win this, to use your term, referendum on his leadership. However, that really depends on how unified the opposition is, how they're able to engage with voters. So unlike a year ago, the election is all to play for those in the Indian electoral system. Do you have anything you would like to add further, James, on that kind of summary?
No, I mean, I think that's a very elegant way of putting it. But for an OMFIF listenership, I think it's important to stress that India is currently the world's fastest growing economy and will be one of the world's most exciting emerging markets as China slows over the next period. And so what happens in this election is very consequential, both for global growth and for international markets as well. So it's really worth paying attention to what happens over the next month.
Fantastic. I think that is a great point to end on. So thank you so much for joining us, and thank you Thank you all for listening as well. If you have enjoyed or have any comments on today's podcast, please do leave a review. We release a new podcast every Tuesday, which you can download and subscribe to our channel to be kept up to date on these. So thank you very much for joining us, James, again. And we hope you enjoyed the program, to everyone listening. Thank you.